with Sylvie Tigerson, 104-year-old suffragist. Interviewer was Sherna Gluck. Present also was the interviewee's daughter, Mary Shepherdson, who asked questions and clarification. The interview took place in the large living room of the convalescent home in which the interviewee is presently living in the Menlo Park, Palo Alto area. The conditions were less than ideal, and as the tape progresses, one hears in the background the calling of bingo numbers, the TV set, and various miscellaneous noises. The initial interview, which was undertaken on 10-12-72, was an exploratory one to learn about the respondents' activities in the suffrage and birth control movements. The interview was rather wide-ranging and covered good portions of her life with not too much continuity. A further interview will be attempted to elucidate details of the work done in the St. Paul Birth Control Clinic in which she was involved, and also details of the work of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Suffrage Group. This material will cover primarily the period from 1911 to 1915 or so. Tape begins.
And I'll ask you a couple of questions, and then maybe you can just tell me about what you did. Can you tell me a little bit about your work in the birth control movement when you were in
we three women that were too connected with me organized this birth control clinic that we had punctuated in St. Paul, but we had a doctor from Minneapolis and one from St. Paul that assisted us in the clinic.
What did you do exactly?
This was the birth control movement. And I don't know that it had to be a secret because it was against the law. It was against the law at that time to even buy contraceptive material, anything that would prevent conception. It was against the law at that time. And certainly it was against the law to print anything or to advertise in any way, shape, or manner any kind of thing that you were doing in the line of birth control, because it was, as I say, against the law.
What year was this that you had the clinic?
What year?
Do you recall?
I can't remember the years, the special years of what they were, because I've never formulated it, and it never was published, except just as anyone made a little sketch of it or something, and it was probably on a little notice or something might have been published in one or the other of the papers, because it was so strictly against the law that we weren't printing it nor advertising it nor doing anything public about it. As I say, you don't do something that's against the ordinances of your city and the laws of your state. You don't do anything in the open.
Mother, who was in with you?
Well, there were two women. I wouldn't want to mention their names.
Why not? They're dead, and they'd be happy. I mean, that's
an important part of history.
Placed in history. Was it Mrs. Benepe?
No, I said that I won't mention their names.
All right.
Because it was...
Yeah, but it's not illegal now.
Well, I don't know that they'd want me to be mentioning their names. Of course, associated... There were three other women associated very closely with me. I don't need to mention their names, who they were. There were three of them. They were very prominent women. One of the husbands, the husband of one of the women was a doctor, a very prominent doctor in St. Paul. And as I say, the work we were doing was strictly illegal.
Mm-hmm. Did you just give out information, or did you actually have contraceptives too?
Oh, no. We gave, we followed, who was it?
Margaret Sanger.
Margaret Sanger, and we had her, we advocated and we circulated the birth control contrivance that she had invented.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked very strictly with her, of course. We worked because she was organizing a movement that went all over the country. And
was she the one who asked you to set this up? Margaret Sanger, was she the one who asked you to set up this clinic?
Well, I don't know that anyone asked us to set it up. I think that it was needed, and she just helped us. She gave us information and advice and help. Mainly, of course, she gave us information, which we circulated, and they gave out. I was written up as the, I was written up because of the prominence of my husband. I wouldn't have been, they would have been as much, my two co-partners would have been, they would have been written up as much as I was if their husbands had been as prominent as mine. One of them was a doctor and the other didn't, was divorced from her husband, so there wasn't any answer thing there about the clinic and so forth. But my husband was very prominent in the city, and so I was written up, and I was written up even as it was. I was written up editorially in our principal paper, the Pioneer Press, yes. I was written up editorially there.
Denounced, Mother?
I wasn't exactly denounced. I wasn't commended. but it was a case of, it was just giving out information and commenting on the, a little about it. Not particularly, I don't just remember. I had saved all of the clippings, and then I left them with one of my workmates there that had, I left them with Mrs. Keller when I went to California one winter, took your children to California one winter, and they were mislaid or lost or stolen. She thought they were stolen.
I was looking for them in your books. I couldn't find anything about it there in the books.
No. All that material that had been collected and saved and everything was stolen that winter I went to California, or stolen or lost. We don't know what, she doesn't know whatever became of it. It disappeared in her house.
How was the clinic supported?
What?
How was the clinic supported? Where did the money for it come from?
Oh, it came from all kinds of sources. It came from anyone and everyone who wanted to make a contribution. It was just like these other movements. It was a volunteer movement, and whoever felt interested in it or wanted it to continue or anything made a contribution. And it was like the suffrage movement, which was, in a certain way, was somewhat identified with it at that time, because most of the women who were very prominent in the suffrage movement were also prominent in the birth control movement. And some of the wealthy women of the city. And I don't know that there's anything more to tell, except that we worked all the time with it, and we had very prominent speakers come from all over.
This is on the suffrage movement, right?
Yes, on the suffrage. Well, the birth control movement. In my life, the two were so closely identified. I mean, we were working at the same time in both movements.
You were working in the suffrage movement in Minnesota?
The people that I was working with were identified with both movements. And we had the wife of a professor at the college in Indiana, the state university. She was a very fluent speaker, and we had her lecturing in St. Paul and other places. I paid her expenses for a month in a month's suffrage work in Iowa. She gave a whole month up to that, and I paid her expenses for it. And she was a fluent speaker and very attractive.
What was her name?
I've forgotten her name just now. I shouldn't forget it, but I have. I've forgotten a lot of things.
Maybe you'll remember it later.
Did you work for the suffrage amendment when you were in Minnesota?
Oh, we worked for We were working constantly for the suffrage movement as well as the birth control movement. They were a part of our lives. We were identified with them there in our work with both movements, the suffrage and the birth control movement.
What was the name of the organization you worked with mostly, Mother? Your women.
I don't know that.
The Women's Welfare League, wasn't that it? That you worked with mostly?
That was one of the big city organizations. That was one of the big city organizations that I worked with. You saw the little booklet in my box of
letters. Yes,
yes. Yes, it was published. We had our constitution published. We were prominent. We were very prominent as a birth control league. That is, the Women's Welfare League was a very prominent organization. And we gave, we served 100 luncheons every week, every Saturday at 25 cents apiece. We served 100 luncheons. And in order to get the group together, and then we had all the prominent speakers, the different people that came through St. Paul.
Was this for both suffrage and birth control?
The Women's Welfare League, which was identified with suffrage. They couldn't be identified with the birth control movement because that was illegal. And but they worked. They were the women that belonged to the Welfare League and were officers in it, and all supported the birth control league. And so we were closely identified, not as organizations, but as people closely identified with the movement.
What did you feel, how did you feel women would change after suffrage became effective? What kinds of things did you think would change for women?
I never had any, illusions about what women would do. I was never that foolish as to know. I think women are responsible for a great deal of the backwardness of the world. I never had any feeling at all that the world would be better and go on to happier and wiser things. I thought women were just as corrupt in every way as men were, along and just as lacking in any kind of judgment and help. In other words, I never had any illusion about women. I think we tried to have a myth, you know, that women were superior, and that if the world had suffrage that was advocated, then the whole world would be better and all these things that were evil would disappear, all of which was perfect nonsense, because women were just people like men were, good and bad and enlightened or not, the same as men were, and I never had any of the illusions. Your father had a lot of illusions about what women would do, but I never had any of those illusions.
Did you feel, though, that things would change for women themselves, that they would be...
Well, I believe in evolution and in progress. I couldn't read the history of the world from Neanderthal man up to the present time without knowing there'd be a great many changes. And I looked at it intelligently. I didn't look at it in the light that women as women were going to change. They would change as a group of people and as a part coming along in the evolution of the of society and the world, and not as men or women or anything.
But why did you, why did you work for suffrage? And
how did we work
for suffrage? Why were you doing this?
For suffrage?
Yeah.
Because it was a part of the movement. It's a part of, there's every great movement. These movements are going on today at the present time. And each little thing helps the larger movement until it comes out and can really accomplish something. It educates and works. It's a part of the education of the world, these small movements are, and these little groups that we have around that are trying to do world betterment. They're just a part of the educational process. They can't of their own, any small group at any time, accomplish anything. It has to be in the larger effort as they put that forth. And so it's all a great part, as I looked at it, a part of an educational process.
But don't you think, I mean, the 14th Amendment, don't you think that was a benefit, direct benefit to women?
The what?
You know, that the women's suffrage, I mean, the right to vote, don't you think that was a direct benefit to women?
Well, of course I do. I think it was a part of not only their benefit to them, but I think it was part of their of the educational process. It was inevitable that women were to vote. They were human beings and endowed with certain, as we said the old words, inalienable rights. And they were had the creation of things that the same process that men had, and had to be a part of it. And I thought as the world progressed and went on further that men and women would come to have absolutely equal rights. They'd be human beings, not men, not sexes. They'd be human beings and have certain inalienable rights, and both sexes.
Did you feel that the suffrage movement would accomplish that?
I thought the suffrage, oh, certainly I thought that for women to have the right to vote is the same as men. It was ridiculous when you stop to think of it, that in a world composed of women and men, and where the women had the most influence because they brought up the children, and in the end had far more influence than the men, that they should be the ones restricted in what was the a larger field for progress, and that was in the voting process and in the participation in municipal affairs and state affairs and all. And I don't think we've gone very far yet, because we are far away yet from a woman, anyone thinking of a woman being president of the United States. And there isn't any reason in the world why some women aren't just as capable, and so forth, as some men to become heads of the government. But we're a long way from that, I think. And, of course, I might be surprised if I were to live on and see that it would be possible much sooner than I'm looking for it, that women will run for president of the United States.
Did you feel that after the suffrage amendment was passed, did you feel there were any changes in this country? After the suffrage amendment passed, after the 19th Amendment passed, did you feel that there were any changes that happened in the 1920s?
Well, of course, there have been many changes that have happened, and much broadening out since the amendment was passed, the Woman's Suffrage Amendment. It was just a part of the educational evolution of the world, not just a little movement or something just in by itself. It wasn't that. It's a part of the larger educational process, the evolution of the world since the first history we have of it, Neanderthal man, since his origin. All these little things like birth control and everything are just parts of a great movement of evolution, the parts of evolution. That's all the way I can explain it. Just as we're going on and on, we're going on now to greater and greater evolutionary processes all through.
Mother, about the, do you think that the position of women is better than it was, for example, when you were, say, my age or Sharon's age?
Well, the only thing is that things then that were just evoluting, or we were just coming out of, are just taken so completely for granted now that we don't even stop to think about it. No one thinks for a moment or stops to think. It's uncommon or unusual for women to go to the polls and vote. We don't even think of that. It's so common now. We don't think of the fight that was made for it or anything. We just accept it. And that's the way with all these processes. To my mind, the whole process is a process of evolution.
Well, but I mean this specifically, you know, specifically on the women question, what do you think are some of the advances that have been made since you were a girl?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think.
What about from point of view of education? Do you think that women have more chance to get higher education?
Oh, I think they have every chance. There isn't any restriction at all on women now. There's no lack of what they can do and where they can go and how to be educated. But I don't think women are more advanced in any way than men are. I have no illusion. It's only along some lines that they are a little more interested and that they work a little harder for. But as to thinking that women in any way, I would say not in any way do I think women are superior to men. I think they're all human beings and There are just as many very high-spirited men working for good ends, and there are these same high-spirited women.
Sharon,
and it's a part of the evolutionary movement.
Excuse me. Sharon, over here, you see this girl sitting down there?
Yeah.
She's Persian. She's from Persia, and she is a trained nurse. And grandmother Farzan, that's your little aide.
Did you have any disappointments after the passage of the suffrage movement? Did you think that things hadn't gone as you hoped they might?
Oh, no, because I never had any illusions to start with. I was too, for God's sake, I hope I was too intelligent to have illusions. I think that I wouldn't want to be accused of that, because women are human beings the same as men.
Now, Mother, how about women in the peace movement? Were you ever connected with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom?
Yes, I belonged to it. I was a part of it. And we had our organization there and gave a dinner. Every weekend we gave a luncheon. A Saturday luncheon.
No, I'm talking about, you remember the peace organization?
Yes.
Women's International League. Not the Women's Welfare League, but the Women's International League. Remember that Alice Park was so active in? Did you belong to that peace league? That international league?
I don't know that I, what you call, definitely belonged. I was working and in sympathy with the various movements, and as head of a very large organization, as the Women's Welfare League was, and we catered to international as well as national speakers and all we had. I felt
what were some of those big peace women that used to come? Remember the St. Paul? Didn't you entertain a lot of those international leaders?
Sarah Bard Field was one of them. She's living here in California. She could tell. She would be the one to interview if you want to interview about suffrage and what was done for suffrage. Because she was the one that...
She's in worse condition than you are, Mother. Sarah Bard Field is really in bad shape.
Well, she was a great worker and a very efficient worker, and her picture hangs in the library in Congress, in our national capital, along with some other women that worked. But she was very efficient, and she gave up all of her time, and then she had a wonderful husband to helped out. He was a fluent speaker and a very humorous one, and so forth. There were many very wonderful women that were working in the suffrage movement at the time that I was. I was limited, my time was limited in a way, because I had four children, and I was quite free because I had good help with the children I had that left me free to do things. It was Lala being there that left me the free time to do what I did do. And so instead of devoting myself to you children at that particular time when you were small, I gave it to the suffrage and the birth control movements, of which I really was a part. And it's not anything to be regretted about anything. It was a part of the larger movement. And that's the way I want you children to regard it, as a part of participating in the larger movements of the world. And I could have devoted more time to family. You were well looked after and well taken care of, beautifully tended in every way, so I wasn't neglecting you And I gained a great deal of prominence, more prominence than I would have had, except that I had four children that were all thriving, and they never had any problems in school or any troubles or any backward. They were all progressive, my children were. They didn't need credit all along the line. If anyone, they wanted to write me up with my children, they had good material to go on, because my boys never did a thing that was questionable, and I never had any trouble in any way.
Mother, how about your mother? Wasn't Grandma a friend of Margaret Sanger's?
My mother?
Yes.
No.
I thought she knew Margaret Sanger.
She knew Margaret Sanger just as someone coming through, coming to Portland. And
didn't she entertain her there?
Yes, she entertained Margaret Sanger. And she, oh yes, my mother was part of the liberal movement, of course. She was, went right along with every phase of the liberal movement.
And she was born in 1845, right?
Yes.
And went through the Civil War?
Yes, she went through the Civil War as a young woman, very young woman, with her children. And your grandfather, of course, was in the Civil War. He served with Grant. He was with Grant at Vicksburg, your father was.
Grandfather.
Your grandfather. And he was wounded in the head. He had a wound where he had to have a silver plate. And he was, he did his share. And he has a, they put a special tomb over his grave back in Illinois where he was buried as a, because he had served in the Civil War. He received one of the special tombs.
Mother, I was trying to tell that story about where you got your name.
Yeah.
How you got the name Sylvie.
Yeah. Well, you say you've told that story.
No, I'm not sure that I have it right. Do you want to tell her the story again where you got your name?
Well, it just was that my grandparents were coming along the Mason and Dixon line, and at this one spot where they stopped and where I entertained this fleeing Negro family, husband and wife and two or three children. There was this little girl, this little Negro girl that my father, as a little boy at the time, got well acquainted with the two or three days that they were held over there on their way. This was a part of the Mason and Dixon line, which my grandparents belonged to.
And, well, not what?
And so years afterwards, when I came along, they were thinking about a name and wondering what kind of, I was the fourth child in the family and had no special name for me. And my father suggested, he said, call her after that little girl from Louisiana. This particular set of Negroes were from Louisiana, and she has a French name. They had a little girl that had a French name, and so they said, let's call her that, since they didn't have any other name in view about it. So I was named that after that. It just happened that that was, as I came along, happened to.
Now, Mother, didn't your grandfather, didn't he have a station on the Underground Railroad?
He didn't. He wasn't in charge of a station, no. But he stopped at these stations. He wasn't in charge of a station. They went on their way still further, went into way across from Rochester, New York. They went clear across the country to into Iowa, and they stopped at Fayette, Iowa, a little place there, a little fort I think it was at the time, and stopped there and settled in Fayette, Iowa. My grandfather was a Presbyterian minister, and he had a congregation there and was a real pioneer. But he was burned to death in that prairie fire when he came. He'd been out ministering to a sick patient, well, a patient who was dying, in fact, and cross country. He had taken his little boy with him, a five-year-old son. And coming back, they were caught in this prairie fire and burned to death. And that's the way my grandfather met his death. He was on his errand of mercy when coming back from it. And I never had any religion, and I had less after I knew that story, that my grandfather had been on this mission of giving spiritual help. He was a minister. He was a Presbyterian minister. And he was giving spiritual help to this woman who was dying. And he'd gone across on this prairie, and coming back, he and the little boy he'd taken with him were caught in the prairie fire and burned to death. So I always had, I never in the world could have had any religion after that, knowing, hearing that story.
When you came out to California, did you continue your work in birth control and suffrage?
I don't know when I actually moved to California.
1917.
Oh, I was always in some way or other connected with the movement. I never lost out in connection with the movement. I'm connected with it today. I'm a member of the organization at San Jose.
I've contributed.
And the parent teachers.
Tell her what you belong to nowadays, right now. You belong to Planned Parenthood.
Yes, I belong to the ACLU. And I don't know.
The NAACP, weren't you one of the
first
members? And haven't you belonged to the NAACP since it was founded?
Well, I think I have. I couldn't swear to it, but I think that there's no question, because I can't remember when I didn't belong. So I don't remember. I wouldn't like to be put on the stand and have to certify, because I wouldn't remember enough.
What kind of work did you do when you came out to California after you left Minnesota? What sort of activities were you involved in?
Oh, I don't know that I could tell, because I was always very active in whatever there was going on. I was active just as I have been up until this time. That's one of the things that brought, Marion McKay and myself together, was the San Jose birth control movement, because she was greatly interested in it. And then she's given me these generous presents of $10 and things like that for the birth control league, and for our work in that. But I've been greatly interested. One of my greatest interests at the present time and up until is the ACLU, the free speech movement. That, I think, is terribly important, that we keep that alive. And I belong to that since its inception. One of the things back there when it was first organized by Roger Baldwin and some others, I belong to the ACLU. And I consider that one of the most valuable organizations that we have in this country. And I wish my family felt the same. I don't urge anything on them because they're highly intelligent, each one of them, and they know what they want and what they consider valuable.
What you're talking about, I belong to the ACLU.
Yes.
I do. Sometimes they kind of bother me defending Stockley.
Well, you better stick to it because it's the only
organization. Shockley. They raising a case here to ask that the Shockley isn't able to give his racist course over there at Stanford. Stanford blew the whistle on him, and it kind of bugged me to be putting my money into anything like that. But if you got to be consistent, why, there you go.
Here's where you are.
Well, anyway, I consider it, whatever may be any variations, I still consider it one of the most valuable organizations, and I belong to it. And as far as I know, I'm still a member of it. And I also am a member of the San Jose Birth Control League.
Did you have any birth control clinics when you came to California? Did you set up more clinics here?
No, I don't think. I think there were already clinics here.
How about Ruthie?
Oh, yes, she did a great deal of work in the birth control movement. Ruthie did.
That's her daughter.
Oh, yes, before she died. Oh, yes, when you bring her up, I have to think that she and I worked together. I contributed money to things, and she did the work. She gave her time and her experience and her knowledge as a doctor. She gave to the...
Where did Ruthie have her clinic, Mother?
Well, her work was done a great deal in Berkeley and in Oakland in the schools. She was the birth control, or she did her work. A lot of her work was done in the schools of,
Well, wasn't the school where she examined the students, but she had a special clinic, didn't she?
Clinic? Yeah, she belonged to a special clinic. Now, I can't say that I know too much about that. I don't know too much because that was done without my particular participation or knowledge, but she did it. And she functioned. She gave her services as a doctor. That was given not to promote the movement or anything like that. It was given as her genuine services in showing how to work the birth control contrivance that was used, or how to use what, in other words, to how to use what knowledge was available, how to make it practical and use it. She was gave out that, which was very valuable to receive and have and give.
When was the first time that you voted?
Oh, I can't tell.
Was it in 1920, right after the suffrage amendment?
Well, it was the very earliest time that anyone could vote that I voted. I think if I had my scrapbook here, you had that scrapbook, one of my scrapbooks, where my friend